show taking you home on a Tuesday. It's the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Caleb Hatch, and you're always connected to the show on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. 46862. Tell us what is on the sports brain of yours. Any questions, comments, or suggestions, 46862. Big show today coming up this hour. Kevin Bowen will talk Pacers, Colts. Of course, the big one for the Colts coming up this weekend. We'll have Kevin Bowen's comments about the Colts' health and how things look heading into the Tennessee Titans game on Halloween this Sunday. He'll join us at 4:35. Next hour, Sean Sedlowski. Maybe those of you that listened to the Comets home opener, season opener last Saturday night, had a chance to hear Sid sitting in with Shane Alberani on the call. But Sean Sedlowski is going to join us from his home up in Michigan coming up this hour or next hour at 5:20. Plenty of other topics on the way, but among them, the Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia. Caleb Hatch, ready, armed, and dangerous with five events that happened all in the same calendar year. We'll try to guess them. It'll give you a chance to win a large pizza to Pizza Hut as we'll play Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia sometime just after 5 o'clock. At 6 o'clock, it's the debut of the Mastodons Coaches Show. The Sports Rush Chopper warming up, getting ready to roll across town because I have to get from here to there, which is the Holiday Inn this year, our host site of the Mastodons Coaches Show. It's right across from the Coliseum, right there near the Purdue-Fort Wayne campus. The Holiday Inn, Mastodons Grill. That is the restaurant just inside the main lobby. You're welcome to come and join us starting at 6 o'clock. Men's basketball coach John Kaufman, women's basketball coach Maria Marcusano. That is 6 to 7 tonight, right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, tomorrow, more coaches' shows. Jeff Brom will be on at 6:05 and Inside IU Football with Tom Allen at 7:05 before we have Pacers basketball against the Toronto Raptors on the road tomorrow night. That is right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. You know, there's been a lot of buzz this year. Of course, you don't hear it as much when the Colts do get a win, and after the win out in San Francisco, it seems to have quieted down. But we've heard buzz this year about people that are unhappy. Chris Ballard and Frank Reich got their extensions, and whether or not Frank Reich is truly the guy to lead the Indianapolis Colts. Well, I did some research today, and for everybody that thinks that maybe Frank Reich isn't the guy to take the Colts into the future, the question has to be, who is? Who would you be able to get to come in and take over this team and take it to the next level or be better than Frank Reich at this point in time? And you have to be careful what you wish for, because too many times when teams fail, fan bases are upset. They want a coaching change. They blame the coach. And in some cases, it's warranted. In some cases, maybe not as much, because it often is personnel that drives the NFL. And more than anything else, it's the quarterback. But I did some research into first-year coaches this year in the NFL, and it hasn't exactly been a ringing endorsement for coaching changes with teams that struggle. So far, new coaches in the NFL this year, their record, 4-22. And I don't know that anybody has more than two wins. I think 2-5 is the best record among new coaches this season in the NFL. So it's not exactly the easiest thing to make a coaching change and have instant success. We've seen Urban Meyer struggle in Jacksonville. Of course, Robert Saleh, who got the big win over Tennessee, but now a real flop this past week against New England. You've seen other coaches that have struggled in their first year, and so the total record is 4-22. Of course, Coach Campbell up in Detroit off to an 0-7 start after the Lions lost at Los Angeles against the Rams this Sunday. But it is not easy to win quickly in the NFL. And yes, you could probably look at Frank Reich and say, boy, some of the play calls just are head scratchers, because yes, there have been some questionable play calls. Three runs right into the middle of the line of scrimmage against Seattle from the 1 or 2 yard line resulted in nothing. And then a scramble and a A fourth down failure ended up really ultimately perhaps costing the Colts the win against Seattle. After watching Seattle last night, I cannot believe the Colts lost to that football team. Now, I know it didn't have Russell Wilson, but just watching them defensively, just it just seems to me like that's a team that the Colts should have beaten. Then you have the third and eight run against Baltimore, which was basically a sacrificial play. You just gave up on the play to set up a field goal attempt against the Ravens. That backfired when the field goal attempt got blocked. So, you know, but he did change his thought process because he stayed aggressive against San Francisco, continued to throw the football despite weather conditions that would maybe say run the ball. Frank Reich was aggressive, still balanced the run and the pass, and I thought the play calling was a lot better. But the other thing we've noticed with the Colts is that the scripted plays at the beginning of the game are often better than the plays that you go to when it goes more ad-lib, when you're trying to call plays on the fly. I don't think that's the strength of Frank Reich. That's why I think he needs an offensive coordinator or even a co-offensive coordinator that is skilled in play calling, setting up plays, coming up with the right plays in the right situations, because I think it's very difficult for a head coach down at field level to be able to come up with the right play at the right time, especially on the fly. And I don't think Frank Reich's been terrific at it. Now, play design is another thing. I don't think play design is exactly great for the Colts, and that you've got a point of Frank Reich, who is the offensive, you know, an offensive head coach who's very involved in the offensive scheme, offensive plays. I don't think the Colts are as advanced in setting up misdirection and trying to create confusion among the defense. But all in all, is there better? Is there someone out there that is just a can't-miss prospect that you would rather see as a Colts head coach that you think is better than Frank Reich? All I'm saying is before you jump on Frank Reich and say he has to change, and we can all be critical. We can all be critical of decisions that are made. I mean, that's just part of having social media these days. People want to critique. And, you know, if you do it respectfully, I think that's fine. If you start calling for someone's job and someone's head, it's like, okay, what's the next step? Don't just criticize. Try to advise. Try to give us something that is better than the current situation. I don't know that there is all that much that's better for the Colts than Frank Reich. Colts have a big one this week. A lot of pressure on the Colts. Lose this week and you can pretty much kiss the playoffs goodbye. I don't even see how the Colts make the playoffs if they lose this week, because it's another divisional loss, gives you another loss in the whole tiebreaker thing. You're going in, you know, the record in the AFC, the record in the division, all of those things that come up in tiebreakers, you know, and then you'd be 0-2 against Tennessee. A chance to win the AFC South would pretty much be out the window, especially considering Tennessee's schedule from here on out. So I think the Colts have to win this game. Is it the biggest early season must win? Are we being fair to this game to call it a must win? How big is this game? Caleb, it's an October game. Normally, we would think with half a season left, no game can be so big that it's must win, backs against the wall, season on the line when it's October. But I feel like that's fair in this situation.
I felt like Sunday night for the Colts was more of a must-win game than Sunday's game against Tennessee, because if you lose to a team that is at least record-wise level with you, there's really not a whole lot of hope to think that the Colts as a team would be able to even compete and claim the game the following week, this week against Tennessee.
What we needed to see from the Colts against San Francisco is that injuries and the strength of schedule is the reason the Colts are sitting where they are, that this is still a good football team. And a good football team, if that's what the Colts have, will go out to San Francisco and get a win. And so we were basically looking at the Colts game as judgment day. Is this a good football team, yes or no? This will be the test that shows us, because it's really hard to gauge when you have teams like Baltimore on the road, Tennessee on the road, to say whether or not you've got a good football team. And when you come back home and it's the Texans and you destroy them, is it still a good football team? We haven't had that judgment day where you can go up against an opponent that maybe it's a 50-50 game and you go on the road and you get a win. I think the Colts showed us they can be a good football team. Now the question is, are they good enough to make up the ground that they've lost with its early season schedule and be able to find their way back into a playoff position? It starts Sunday. I mean, this is it right here. I don't see, and I don't know what the percentages are because they always have those percentages posted as far as the chance to make the playoffs. And I don't know what those percentages are if the Colts win versus if they lose. But in my mind, it's a huge difference. I mean, I would say, and I'm guessing, completely guessing, because I don't have the calculation in front of me, but I would guess it's a 20% difference between winning this week and losing this week. I would say you're going from 45 to 50% down to 20% if you don't win the game against Tennessee. And I think 20% might even be kind of optimistic. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862. We'll talk more about this with Kevin Bowen, who's going to join us coming up at 4:35. Last night, Pacers blown out by the Milwaukee Bucks, 119-109. I watched most of this game last night because I can. For those of you that can't, I'm sorry. But it leads me right in to my three-year topic now of Miles Turner, and is he the right guy to be in Indianapolis? Rick Carlisle last night played Goga Bitadze in the fourth quarter over playing Miles Turner, and it's not the first time that he's chosen to go with a backup over Miles Turner at crunch time. Now, yes, it was, you know, a 15 to 18 point game. Then the Pacers kind of made a game out of it, had a little run going, and Rick Carlisle didn't go to his bench, didn't bring in Turner at that point. He stayed with Bitadze. What does that tell you? When you look at Turner's final numbers for this game, he was 1-for-4 in three-pointers, 4 rebounds and assists, 2 turnovers, minus 15 in 14 minutes of action last night. Here's the list of players that had more rebounds than Miles Turner did in last night's game. Malcolm Brogdon, Chris Duarte, O'Shea Brissett, Goga Bitadze, and Domantas Sabonis. So basically, Miles Turner finished tied for 5th in total rebounds. I mean, the guy is a 6'11", 7-foot, whatever he's officially listed at. The ball should just bounce off the rim into his hands more than 4 times in a game. And I think it's fair to ask the question. I mean, do you see that he's a contributor to what the Pacers are trying to do? If you're going to go with Sabonis as your center, you've got Miles Turner as kind of a lost guy out there. He doesn't do well hanging at the three-point line. What is his role? If he doesn't rebound, he doesn't defend one-on-one very well. He'll tell you he does, but he also tells you a lot of things that maybe aren't exactly true or inflated. You know, he broke free for that 40-point game. But last night, against a good opponent, four points, not exactly a big night for Turner. I mean, the question now is going to be Rick Carlisle. What does he believe the role is for Miles Turner, and is there a fit in Indiana?
What's odd is you look at his box score on the season. Yes, there's the 40-point game, but the rest of the games are outliers. 9 points, 5 points, 4 points. I mean, he's shooting 56% from the field, which is great. I mean, it's phenomenal for a guard, but he's a power forward to a center player. I mean, he's kind of a hybrid. And he's shooting decent from three at 37%, but yeah, you're not getting a lot of production otherwise.
But you got to take that 40-point game out. What was he, 5-for-7 or something from three in that 40-point game?
He was hot from outside in that game. Let's see, 5-for-9.
Oh, 5-for-9.
And add 10 rebounds.
Yeah, I mean, he played. But normally, you're just not getting much production. And he seemed totally lost on the court last night against Milwaukee. There just wasn't a good matchup for him. There were times I think he actually tried to guard Giannis, and that was a complete mismatch. So it just to me, it just continues to show itself that Miles Turner is great for community and for PR, everything like that. Loves to be a Pacer, and that's all great. But it's a business where you have to win. And if the style doesn't fit him, and if the Pacers are going to be a mediocre team because they don't upgrade from him, that's on the Pacers. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. We're going to come back at the NFL power poll for this week after last week's results. Also, high school football sectionals. It is everybody in action this week. The 6A and 5A programs off their bye. We'll give you highlights of some of the schedule that comes up this weekend. And Kevin Bowen from 107.5 The Fan down in Indianapolis, he's going to be joining us coming up at 4:35. Tuesday edition of The Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Halloween week this week. Caleb, are you a Halloween guy? Are you a dress-up guy? Do you like to go to parties, functions, or anything else in some kind of a costume?
No, I'm not really a dress-up guy or costume. I mean, I might do something like I'm going to a friend's house, I think Saturday night, but I'm not really into Halloween. I do like buying candy and having some left over for myself, though. That part I do like.
Let me ask about the candy, because this is a situation we have at our house regularly. When you get to the candy and you go to the store and you buy the candy, or maybe your spouse goes to the store and buys the candy, if you're the one responsible to pass out the candy, do you find yourself wanting to give out the candy that you think is the best candy, or do you find yourself giving out the candy you don't like because it's tough on the trick-or-treaters? You're going to keep the good stuff to yourself.
I give out candy that I want, and so some of it I know the kids will like, and some of it I know they won't like, and that's the stuff that I get to keep, a.k.a. I like Mounds and Almond Joy, and I know the kids hate that stuff, so I get to keep that for myself.
Because sometimes you feel like a nut. Sometimes you don't. Am I dating myself? Do you not know?
Oh, I know it.
Do you know where I'm going?
I have heard the phrase.
You're now singing the song in your brain, aren't you? Sometimes you feel like a nut. I mean, how can you not hear that song in your mind right now?
Is that Mr. Peanut? I honestly don't remember what it's from. I do remember the phrase.
No, it's the Mounds and Almond Joy commercial.
Oh.
Because one has nuts, one doesn't. And so for years, they advertised together. And it said, sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. And so Almond Joy's got nuts, Mounds don't. I could sing the entire song, Caleb. It's like I
just knew
the
sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. I didn't know any other context. I do recall that from the 90s.
Okay, so that was one of the best candy bar commercials. The other is the Snickers commercials, where don't you need a Snickers? Some of those are pretty good. But those aren't as memorable. I mean, the jingle is catchy, and with Mounds and Almond Joy, you remember the jingle. Grew up on it.
Not a Snickers fan, by the way. I think I'm like one of the few people who really does not like Snickers.
See, I'm not even a candy bar kind of guy. You're a candy bar guy.
Yeah.
You eat candy bars while I sit here and talk.
I'm eating Clif bars.
Okay, so something more nutritional than a candy. It looks like a candy bar the way you open it up and the wrapper and everything else. Okay. All right. I'll give you credit. Show me the wrapper. Prove it. I'm more of a M&M's, Reese's Pieces. I like those types more. I do like Reese's Cups. That's not really a candy bar. And Kit Kats. That's not really a candy bar. Kit Kat. Is that a candy bar?
Yeah.
Kit Kat?
I would put a bar,
but it's shaped like a gold bar. It's not like a candy bar.
I would put anything that is of the chocolate variety, you know, with other fillings or options, as far as the chocolate candy. And then there's candy where it's just more of the, you know, Starburst, Smarties, Sweet Tarts, that kind of stuff. Non-chocolate candy.
By the way, Kevin Bowen's going to be our guest coming up in just a few minutes. Now that he has a child, he'll be able to take out the stroller, dress the kid, and collect candy. See, it's perfect when you're an adult because you can use the kid. And of course, you know, the child's not going to eat that candy. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. NFL Power Poll. After the games this week, I still have to keep Arizona at number one. What a game that the Cardinals are going to have coming up Thursday night. Thursday night football, Green Bay, Arizona. Green Bay has lost their defensive coordinator to COVID, but they've also lost Devontae Adams, their wide receiver. That one could cost them. That could be a tough one for Aaron Rodgers. I don't know if Cobb is going to be good enough to make up for the loss of Adams. You might have to get more out of your tight ends if you're the Green Bay Packers. But, man, I'll tell you what, you don't want to go into a game against Arizona as well as they've been playing and as well as Kyler Murray's been playing without all of your weapons. And Green Bay will. But I've got Arizona at number one. I've got the Rams at number two, Tampa Bay at number three, Dallas number four. Then I've got Green Bay at number five. At number six, I've got the Tennessee Titans. At number seven, the Buffalo Bills. I've got the Baltimore Ravens at number seven, number eight. And then I've got the Raiders at nine. And the Bengals have made a debut into my top 10. Colts still have to get that win, that marquee win. And so if the Colts win this week, even though it's only going to even the record up at 4-4, it would be 4-4, right? 3-4. I'm confused on the record now.
They'd be four and four with a win because they have the Dolphins, the Texans, and the Niners.
That's right. So they would go 4-4. They might actually be able to crack my top 10 because, again, Colts have had one of the toughest schedules, if not the toughest schedule so far. Although, you know, a couple of those teams like the Dolphins, we thought was going to be a tough game. That turns out to be not a very difficult game. But other than that, the Colts have had a pretty tough schedule. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Coming up this Friday, we are back at Carroll High School for the Homestead Spartans and the Carroll Chargers Class 6A sectional football. As Warsaw continues on their bye, it seems crazy that you've got 6A teams that are going to be on a bye for 2 weeks and go 3 weeks in between games, especially for Warsaw, who lost the game to end the regular season to Concord. It's going to be a long wait for Warsaw as Carroll and Homestead do battle this Friday in Class 6A, a three-team sectional. And that game we will have for you on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. We'll start it with the Parkview Sports Medicine High School Football Tailgate pregame show at 6 o'clock. Jim, Shannon, and Dute previewing a full night of sectional football play. And then after the game, John Nolan and I will be teamed up at the Pine Valley Pizza Hut up until 11 o'clock after the game. Make sure that the Pine Valley Pizza Hut is your post-game destination. If you can't make it to dine in with us, be sure you use your Pizza Hut app to get your order placed. Maybe pick it up on the way home. It's the perfect post-game destination, your hometown Pizza Hut restaurant with the Indiana Physical Therapy High School Football post-game show. That is coming up this Friday right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Still on the way in our next hour, Sean Sidlowski. He is going to join us. We'll talk about his rehab and his recovery from back surgery. How close is he to playing? How does he feel? What were his thoughts when he was on the ice about to have the banner revealed and taken to the rafters? Did it ever cross his mind? Is this thing upside down? We'll ask Sean Sidlowski at all when we talk to him coming up at 5:20 this afternoon. Also, don't forget, we're just ahead of the Mastodons Coaches Show, the season premiere, 6 o'clock tonight. Coach John Kaufman, men's basketball coach, he'll talk about the offseason, what's ahead, and some of the new names and faces, plus some of the returnees on this Mastodons roster. Should be an exciting season for Mastodons basketball. I know, I look forward to every season. But when I look at this roster, there are reasons I'm excited about this roster. I'll give you some of those coming up later on the show. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We want to hear from you today on this Tuesday edition of The Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Back on The Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix 4 to 6. Brett Rump with Caleb Hatch. Coming up next hour, Sean Sidlowski is going to join us. What is his future and could his future include a Comets jersey? We'll ask the questions of Sean Sidlowski coming up at 5:20 this afternoon. Right now, we want to continue our talk on Colts football, maybe even dabble into the Pacers. Joining us now on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline from 93.5, 107.5, The Fan down in Indianapolis, it is Kevin Bowen. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Hey, Brett. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Okay, I'm just going to ask because I hear a small little voice in the background. Are you going to take, it's Rosie, isn't it?
Correct. Yes. Rose. Yes.
Okay.
Rose
are
Marie,
you going
yes,
to take,
Rosie, yeah.
Are you going to take her out trick or treating, dress her up just to collect candy that dad is going to eat on Halloween?
Well, I'm hoping she can't hear you because that's our secret and I'm not going to tell her any of that. So yeah, we actually went to the Children's Museum Sunday. It's one of the pros of playing on Sunday night football. And the first thing that my wife said to me when we came home was, hey, let's see what she got while she did some trick-or-treating there. So I guess it is a nice perk for us. So she's only 16 months, so I don't know how much trick-or-treating that we will get in, but selfishly, if we can get a few Reese's, we're going to be very happy in the Bowen household.
Is that the number one on the Bowen list, is the Reese's?
Yeah, I would say Reese's for me. I would say for my wife, that's a good question. She probably would go with little Reese's. I had a buddy of mine say the other day that he thought 100 grand was in top tier of Halloween candy.
What?
I had to strongly disagree with him there. So, we will be making sure that anybody that shows up at the Bowen house will get some Reese's, and hopefully we don't get many people, so there's more for mom and dad to eat.
Kevin Bowen joining us on the Masters Heating Cooling Hotline. Of course, we had the Colts out at San Francisco in the monsoon. They had a number of fancy names for it, but all it really was a lot of rain and a little bit of wind. Colts went with pretty much a regular offensive play calling. Did that surprise you, how aggressive the Colts were in those conditions?
You know, it's funny you bring that up, Brett. I sat there Friday afternoon at Frank Reich's final press conference of the week, and he was asked about the weather, wet ball drills during practice, all that stuff. And all of a sudden, Reich said, you know, he almost kind of put the weather to the side. He's like, you got to get into that environment, see what it's like, and you still have to throw the football. And then I see Jim Irsay tweet out, you know, a few hours before kickoff, run the football. And I'm like, oh boy, how are these two going to clash? But you know what? Frank got into that environment. It was rainy. It was a bit windy, but he still realized San Francisco can't defend the deep ball. They led the league in pass interference penalties entering Sunday night, and he knew that he had to test them vertically when those chances arose. And you look at those pass interference penalties that the Colts got, you know, a first and 20, a second and 12. Obviously, the ice, you know, they kind of put the game on ice. The touchdown to Pittman. Pittman had the big one earlier in the game as well. I'll give Frank a lot of credit. I think a lot of coaches would have played scared in that environment, would have gone straight run. Frank realized that a weakness of San Francisco is to test them vertically. And sure enough, the Colts hit on it, and I thought it was the difference in the game.
Did the 49ers blow it, or did the Colts make adjustments? Because that first drive, that misdirection, was just totally crossing up the Indianapolis Colts defense, and then I didn't feel like San Francisco really stuck to it after it worked so well at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, it's a fair question. I thought the weather maybe hurt some of their misdirection, at least Kyle Shanahan feeling comfortable continuing to use that throughout the game. Now, sure enough, they dialed it back up, at least that bootleg stuff there on that touchdown drive to Deebo Samuel to make things interesting again. And so that's when it was kind of like, oh boy, you know, this is, you know, Darius Leonard, I thought, had a great quote after the game, like, here we go again. And I thought Leonard had a huge two-point conversion breakup to kind of start the Colts finishing that game. So yeah, maybe a little bit of that. And that's kind of where I sit here after this loss, Brett, or excuse me, after this win, I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is where we talk about after the Miami game of like, what happened with Jacoby Brissett late in that game and Miami moving the football up and down the field. You and I talked that next week. What tangible can you take away? That was a concern for me. You got away with it against Miami. Sure enough, against Baltimore the next week, you didn't get away with it and you lost. So how you defend the bootleg against Tennessee, you know that's going to be a huge storyline because it's something that Ryan Tannehill and that Tennessee offense loves to do.
Caleb and I talked about this point earlier on the show that the Colts really haven't had a game where we've been able to gauge just how good this Colts team is because they played really high-level competition that we knew was good. They lost. Then they played teams we thought they should beat up on, Miami, with Jacoby Brissett having to play quarterback, and then the Texans, and they won. This was really the first maybe 50-50 type game where you thought they could be vulnerable. It's a San Francisco team with Garoppolo back. Maybe they're dangerous. And so did the Colts prove anything as far as how good this team is or can be?
You know, I still think bigger tests, more January-like tests are going to come. Now, I will agree in how you and Caleb kind of laid that out of this game kind of falling a little bit in the middle of what they've had so far. Now, you can make the argument that Jimmy Garoppolo is a backup quarterback. You know, you could easily say that Trey Lance is the guy now, so the Colts have only beaten backup quarterbacks, you know, so far through the first seven games. But I also am going to sit here and say, you're a road underdog, and you went on the road and traveled, you know, halfway across the country and beat a team that's in, you know, probably the best division in football. And, you know, I know we said this after the Miami game. That was the same week that the Titans had lost to the Jets. So beating bad football teams is a part, or whatever, mediocre football teams is a part of what you have to do to get back into this playoff picture. And now you obviously got to string some together, and the margin for error does remain slim because Tennessee continues to win football games. So I do think the Colts have showed me a little bit more. Now the weather, you know, how much, you know, concrete takeaways can you have? Sure. But, you know, coming up here, you're going to play Tennessee, Buffalo, and Tampa, you know, three of your next five. That's going to be a great, great test of just what you look like, because there is still the elephant in the room now of, I think it's, is it eight straight losses to playoff teams? I believe it's eight straight after the loss to Baltimore. Obviously, with those three teams, like I mentioned, Tennessee on Sunday and Buffalo and Tampa later in November, you're going to get a great, great test there.
When you look at the importance of this game coming up on Sunday, and we've talked about this a couple of days here on the show, the Colts cannot afford to fall any further behind Tennessee. But even winning this game, you look at Tennessee's schedule, they've got the Rams the following week, but then it's the Saints at home, they've got the Texans at home, they go to the Patriots, rookie quarterback up in New England, you've got the Jaguars at home, you go to the Steelers, they've been up and down, 49ers come into Nashville, the Dolphins are at Tennessee, and then the Titans finish on the road at the Texans. I don't see more than maybe one loss in that group. I'm not even sure if this game can help the Colts win the AFC South with Tennessee's remaining schedule.
Yeah, I think it was entering last week, Brett, I wanted to say that the Colts had the 15th easiest schedule the rest of the way, and the Titans had the third easiest schedule the rest of the way. So a loss theoretically eliminates you, obviously. A win, and like you said, you still need help. Now, if you look at the Colts schedule the rest of the way, I'm of the thinking of is like, okay, how do you get to 10-7? You know, is 10-7 going to win the AFC South? Probably not with how the Titans have played here recently. That would mean the Titans would have to finish the year, you know, 5-5. So if you look at the Colts schedule right now at 3-4, you know, how do you get to 10-7? And you look at where they could lose games. I talked about Buffalo and Tampa Bay earlier. They still have Arizona on Christmas. I mean, let's just put those three games in the loss column. That means that you obviously can't lose, you know, any of these games. And we're talking, you know, coin flip games of Tennessee. The Raiders is the second to last game of the season. You know, who knows about the Patriots? I do think Mac Jones has played pretty well. But again, who have they, you know, beaten in some of these games? So, even if you win on Sunday, it is a massive, massive game to try and end that divisional drought. But still, you're going to need help the rest of the way, because, you know, Tennessee would still be a game up, and that doesn't even get into the tiebreaker situations, you know, head to head. And obviously you would split that, but then it goes to divisional record, conference record, and on down.
Not counting the secondary, one by one, the Colts seem to be getting a little healthier. News today that Braden Smith's been added to the depth chart. Do we expect him to be available this Sunday?
You know, Frank Reich's phrase is what I was about to say. I don't think that's a word. What he said yesterday was T.Y. Hilton, he's very optimistic on him playing, and Braden Smith, he's optimistic on. Now, I would tend to say that Frank Reich sides on optimism, so, you know, maybe dial those down a little bit to, like, normal human definitions of optimistic and very optimistic. But still, Obviously, the fact that, you know, T.Y. Hilton did some field work last week, I think, is very important for him. And Braden Smith, he actually practiced on Friday. Now, his absence has been over a month, Brett. So that's where I think it's just a little bit of an unknown of, like, all right, you know, how much time does he need on that practice field this week to get ready to go? You do play Thursday night. I don't really think that you're looking at that at all, though, because, you know, this is such an important game, and I just don't think you can look too far ahead. So I apologize for Rosie crying a little bit. But, yeah, right now it seems like there is a legit possibility of getting one, if not both of those guys back.
I'd be crying, too, if I was looking for my Halloween candy that my mom and dad ate.
She's got plenty of goldfish and pouches and whatnot.
Kevin Bowen is on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. All right, so we talk a little bit about the Pacer or the Colts and their health getting guys back. I want to talk about the addition of Quentin Nelson and the offensive line. Fisher at left tackle. What was your analysis of his play against Bosa on Sunday night?
Yeah, not great early. I also thought the weather probably helped him kind of stymie that a little bit as the game moved along. Now, I do think, you know, we should mention, I feel like Eric Fisher has done a nice job from a run blocking standpoint. That's not something that we've probably talked about a whole lot. Now, you look at the Tennessee front, and they're a really good pass rush group all of a sudden. Don't look now, but Danico Autry has more sacks than any player on the Colts roster,
yep,
which probably doesn't make the Colts feel too good about that. But I thought Fisher was a little bit better. Honestly, the move that I would make now, Brett, after seeing Chris Reed at right guard on Sunday night, I would start Chris Reed, which is, you know, I want to commend Mark Lewinsky for his availability. And I know at times I can be like, well, I went on a date and she had a great personality. But, like, when you play offensive line and the Colts have had the injuries they've had, he needs credit. Like, he hasn't missed a snap since late in the 2018 season. So the fact that, you know, Sunday night was the first time we've seen him miss a snap, to me, is very, very commendable. But I just think Chris Reed gives you a little bit more right now. He played 20 snaps more than Mark Golinski at right guard. So there's a possibility on Sunday, if you can get Braden Smith back, all of a sudden you've got your best five out there for the first time all season. That would be Fisher at left tackle, Nelson at left guard, Ryan Kelly at center. Again, I'm assuming Chris Reed at right guard, and then, you know, potentially Braden Smith playing his first game since the opener.
I don't know if PFF hands out grades, but I've been paying attention to the blocking of the Colts tight ends. And I will say, and I even tweeted this, that I think no one in the NFL has better blocking tight ends than the Indianapolis Colts in the combination of Mo Alie-Cox and Jack Doyle. And I even will rate Mo Alie-Cox above Doyle. He has been blowing some people out of holes. I thought he had a terrific game on Sunday.
You know, and I thought that was an issue early in the season. I didn't think your tight ends were blocking well enough early in the year. And I think a lot of times we just kind of group the offensive line and be like, oh, the offensive line stinks. You know, they can't protect. And when you looked at some of the struggles in the run game early on in the year, I thought it was the tight ends not holding up, and which was a shock. Because I agree with you. I think Doyle and Alie-Cox is a great blocking combination. So I thought very important for both of those guys to get back, you know, blocking at a high level.
Do the Colts act on the trade deadline?
Yeah, I just posted something on that to 107.5thefan.com. I say no unless it's a move of Marlon Mack. I would love to play a Madden video game every year if I was running an NFL franchise and push all my chips in every single year. But that's just not reality. I think if you're Chris Ballard, you're Frank Reich, if you're any GM head coach in the league, this week you have a very honest conversation, and the trade deadline's a week from today. You have a very honest conversation. If we buy, does that get us in the top flight of the AFC? I don't think there's anything out there realistically that you could buy. And remember, you are likely not having that first-round pick. Carson Wentz has played in 99% of the snaps, so you got to think about that as well. Now, again, if I can move Mac for a safety or a corner or maybe a wideout, I would look into that. But right now, I'd probably stand pat. And this is going to sound scary, and I don't mean it to sound as scary as it does, but the Colts have made one in-season trade in the last 12 years, and that was Trent Richardson. So I don't know if maybe that's like a jarring, scarring, topic here, and you know, that's caused them to be a little bit more hesitant. But I think right now, I don't put them in the buyer category. I don't put them in a major sell category either. I just think moving Marlon Mack for more of a position of need makes sense.
Okay, so let me go back and let me ask this. If you're thinking that they're not going to be movers or not going to be buyers, what was the point of the renegotiation of T.Y. Hilton's contract then?
I honestly think that was for more of in-season moves, signing potentially street free agents, just giving you some flexibility. This is a long season. I mean, it's 17 games now, so there's going to be other injuries that flare up. And I do think it was to give them flexibility around the trade deadline if they want to do something. So it's kind of twofold. Give you some flexibility if stuff, shows up and if calls are made. But then also, Brett, it's, some street free agents, the Mike Mitchells of the world that you've signed in the past, kind of things like that.
While we're talking about trades, is Miles Turner a Pacer by the end of the season?
He should not be. No, and I would have moved him last offseason, to be honest with you, Brett. I've mentioned this before. In today's NBA, no championship team has four centers as a top kind of nine asset, and that's what the Pacers have in Turner, Sabonis, Goga Batadze, and Isaiah Jackson, if you want to throw Jackson into that center group. And so I just Turner is sitting in big fourth quarters. That's $20 million for a small market team not playing the most important stretch of the game. You just can't have that. I think Turner's a fine player. I think he's a great dude. But with how this roster is built, I just don't think I don't think you're using your resources in the best way possible, investing all this money, all these draft picks, into centers. So I think that's a fault of Kevin Pritchard for going down that path and not moving Turner. And Brett, the other thing you have to remember, Turner's in a contract year next year. So you lose all leverage if you continue to play him and then think you're going to move him next offseason. Player as an expiring contract, that's a totally different type of return value than you could get if the player had, X amount of years left on his contract.
Always appreciate you, Kevin. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again.
Yep. Thank you, Brett. Appreciate it.
Kevin Bowen joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline from 93.5-107.5 The Fan down in Indianapolis.
Podcasts by Federated Media.